Welcome to the Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast with your own Desiana Torres. This is a place for humbled, open, and transparent conversations with members of our own community. Here you can find diverse testimonies of the oppression and trauma faced on both individual and community levels. Do you want to validate the suppressed emotions you've never had the opportunity to speak about? Interested in breaking the silence? Then let's validate all that you feel right here, right now on this podcast. Let's go. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in again to another episode of a new series that I am going to be hosting that is going to focus on being hood made. So what does that mean? What does being hood made mean, right? And so later on in the next episodes, what I'm going to do is kind of interview a couple other folks from the hood and allow for them to explain what that means to them, because there's not one term that can express it, because the hood, if you lived in the hood, had created us and shaped us in some way or form. And so allowing for us all to share how different that can look, or maybe how similar we can connect to the definitions that are provided to us, is truly important. And so I wanted to kind of have this episode to myself and be stingy a little bit and allow for a real conversation to occur for us to kind of express what those experiences are like being raised in the hood. And what they feel like, the emotions that come from it, and how different they are from other communities. And I feel like that's the huge part of it, the huge aspect. And luckily, I have the privilege of being able to be raised in the hood. And then when I went to college, also being able to, you know, live in communities of privilege. And what are the differences that I noticed and stuff. And so I'm going to go into that a little bit today. I hope you all are so far having a great day. I am currently 7 months pregnant. So if you hear me a little kind of running out of breath, that is the reason. So bear with me. It's still important for me to still share and talk. And so these conversations are truly essential. So I want to talk a little bit about the oppression and barriers that are faced inside of our hoods and what that looks like, what it feels like. And yeah, so some of the things that I noticed growing up in the hood, especially as a young girl, is the community violence, right? So if you're raised in the hood, you're almost already sheltered to have this sense of, I got to be careful, I got to be safe. Or, you know, when we were kids playing outside, we always had to come inside when the streetlights came on so that, you know, we weren't out there when the violence occurred or when things happened. But something that I'm realizing that we're noticing now is that the violence is starting to occur a lot more, even despite it being like daylight, nightlight, none of that matter anymore. And the community violence, I feel like really like has a huge hold on our communities right now. Because I feel like that's why some of the times there's so much stigma around being from the hood, because of the community violence. And folks from the outside looking in can look at it and kind of judge us from it and not fully understand what the violence is coming from, where it stems from, why it occurs. And even some of us who kind of live in the hood, like sometimes we are agitated that it does exist. And we are also like, why is it happening, y'all? Like, why we can't get it together? And most of the times it's because it's a systematic oppression that we're facing that not a lot of us have the knowledge of or can really pinpoint, because we internalize so much of it to be our own struggles. And so community violence, such as like gangs and drugs existing in our neighborhoods and territorial, you know, like areas. I remember being in high school, actually, no, as young as middle school, and kind of like walking to school or walking home from school. I don't know if y'all remember being checked. Like, people used to tell us like to raise your shirt up. And for that, people probably like, why I gotta raise my shirt up? Like, what that mean, you know? And what would happen is when you're checked, most times people would try to see what color belt you had on, because that's how most folks would identify themselves with a particular gang. If you were in a red belt, Northaniels, blue belt, Sudaniels, and most times, I'm not sure if they also did it with black too, but I know black in our communities was what we called border brothers. And so there were three types of gangs, at least in the Latinx community, that truly played a huge part in East Oakland. And so there were certain communities that a lot of the gang members did have territorial power over, and they'd be outside posting and stuff like that. And I feel like most times a lot of us look to gangs as it being something that is horrible and bad, and you're right. I mean, I do get it. I do understand that. I think for me it's a little different because a lot of the gang members were folks I went to school with, and I've watched them go to school and grow up and then become, you know, associated with these particular gangs. And it didn't necessarily mean that they were bad people at all. You know what I mean? Like, I was hella cool with them, and I was kind of cool with people from different gangs, because at the end of the day, I always looked at people as human, not for the color they wore, the color of their skin, like none of that. And so even though I did associate and connect to people outside, that wasn't something that I could claim proudly, because I think anyone can agree to this, but you can kind of get in trouble for that if you're being raised in a particular, or maybe associated with certain family members who are from a certain gang, and you're cool with people from a different gang. Like, it's not a good look for you. And so I don't think that was ever known. I think I was just cool with everybody. And how did gangs really, like, connect to me? Personally, I would say, you know, my father is a gang member. I know that that's who he was back in the day. I know now he's, like, been working on himself and, like, definitely become a different person and on his own journey of healing and things of that sense. And so my father, you know, was a second generation of a particular gang in our neighborhood. And although, you know, at the time he wasn't really in our life like that, we still got certain privileges from his existence in that gang. And what that looked like is, like, you know, when I used to go to school and maybe, like, leave school or whatever, like, actually wherever I was, people knew me as his daughter. They'd be like, oh, you Thuggy's daughter, you know, like, or hey, be cool, that's Thuggy's daughter, or hey, protector, that's Thuggy's daughter, or, you know, we're gonna buy you lunch because you're Thuggy's daughter. Like, there was a lot of privileges that kind of came from being his daughter and his role in that particular gang. And those are the things that I feel like gave me an advantage of being safe in the community, because no one would really mess with me for that simple reason. Like, nah, y'all don't want to mess with her, you know. And I felt like a lot of it, even though my father wasn't around at that time, I felt like he was always around because of that protection that I had and the community protection. And so when it comes to, like, particularly looking at gang members, there were a lot of them, like I mentioned before, that I grew up with, that I witnessed being, you know, just regular kids growing up and watching them come down from Jungle Hill after being jumped into the gang, and almost them having this sense of, like, pride and excitement of being associated or maybe being a part of something that they felt in their hearts was, like, something that was powerful and cool. And I think sometimes we forget that, like, there are traumas that many of us experience that could lead us into those kind of decisions, such as, like, maybe you grew up in, all your family members were already associated with the gang, and there's pressure there for you to also be associated with it too, because you grew up kind of witnessing what that looks like, what it feels like. There's folks that I knew, like I mentioned, growing up with, that would kind of tell me, like, their life story. And at a young age, I was able to connect of kind of the dots. And maybe it was my own personal bias or my own opinion of why they joined the gang. But a lot of them would be like, yo, like, you know, I live in a single parent household and I'm the oldest, and there's this pressure to help my mom survive, and so I gotta hustle. And maybe my mom isn't the nicest to me. She tells me I'm a piece of shit. She tells me I'm nothing like, you know, I'm just like my Debbie daddy, or I'm this and that. And so, you know, it kind of kills my spirit. But in this group or in this gang, I feel a sense of unity. I feel a sense of acceptance. I feel a sense of power because, you know, at home I'm beaten and I'm bullied. But here, like, you know, people look at me a little different. They fear me. And it's almost in that sense of that fear plays a huge role for people to feel like they're a little more powerful. And so being able to kind of like listen into people's life stories allowed for me to understand or kind of picture what it could be like to experience life that way. And growing up in a community where, especially East Oakland, where like it's a tough city, like that city will toughen you the fuck up, okay? Like there's no experience there that is going to be easy on you or allow for you to almost in a sense like not want to feel powerful, because there's just so much oppression and so much like to make you feel down about yourself. And so I believe that, you know, there are gang members who definitely experienced that as a young age, who they call young soldiers, who kind of go and do the dirty work. And I'm not going to get too much into those details because I don't have, you know, I'm not someone who was there witnessing it occur, but I did, you know, kind of witness it on the, like what I did and what they allowed me to see. And gangs did have a huge toll on our communities because we witnessed that, you know, it's not so much of who you are, the color that you pick, or, you know, the gang that you associate yourself with. It's kind of where you grow up. And if you grew up in a certain neighborhood that's associated with that gang, that's particularly most likely the gang that you would be associated with. Versus if you're raised in a maybe five blocks over that may be, you know, covered by a different gang, that might be the gang that you grew up to be associated with. So I felt like what I started to learn is that, like, there's no real tie to the color, but more so just to the neighborhood and the community that you're from. And when you grow up and start to do a little more reading and understanding history, you kind of understand the oppression that exists behind it and how it came to be and how, like, the drugs came to invest our communities and who was really in charge of that. Because I feel like us folks forget that that was something that was planted into our communities that really impacted the way that we moved and loved and kind of like survived. Because if you can make money hustling and selling drugs more than you can having a job or trying to push for a career, then it becomes one of those survival tactics that just allows for you to provide for your family. I believe Tupac has a song called Changes, and he talks about that, like, in his lyrics, like, basically, your stomach hurt, like, he said, like, your stomach hurt looking for a purse to snatch, but then he goes, like, talking about the drugs and saying, like, well, I gotta get paid, you know what I mean? Like, I gotta get this money, so it's just a lot of us just kind of living in communities that come with different forms of oppression that can stem from the poverty that we all come, like, basically all experience there. And when it comes to the gangs and drugs, what you recognize also, there's a lot of people who are on drugs who are kind of just trying to numb out from the pain that we experience there. Like, I think a lot of us judge folks who, like, on the streets who be like, you know, kind of tripping out. We be like, damn, they on one. Like, they tweaking. Like, they this, they that. And I'm not going to lie and say I wasn't one of those person or that person who was also mentioning and saying those comments, because I for sure did grow up saying that too. Because you see folks just walking around fighting the air, yelling at themselves, one shoe on, one shoe off. I mean, y'all know what I'm talking about, especially there on like East 14th or certain parts of like Foothill. I believe we always came in contact with that, or witnessing the impacts of the drugs in our community. And how does that experience really like alter the way we exist in our hood, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes if you're raised around so much violence and just drugs and alcohol and a sense of all this stuff, sometimes you lose hope that there's something better out there for you. So you almost accept your reality as is, because that is the reality we live in. And we don't push for anything more than that, because we don't believe that anything more can happen, you know? At least that's how it was for me growing up. Like, my family used to be like, yo, like, you gotta make it to be the first in your family to, like, go to college and, you know, help our family survive and, you know, kind of break these generational chains of our family not ever being able to touch, you know, that educational level, so that we can get out the hood. And that pressure fell on me tight because I'm like, how the fuck am I supposed to make it to college if I don't even know if I'm going to be guaranteed another day, like, living here? And I can understand that personally with, like, not being able to really have that high hope, because it almost as if, like, you know, y'all kind of heard the series and episodes before where we were talking about childhood trauma. Like, y'all seen and heard the kind of trauma that I experienced as a young girl in the household. And so having to come outside to the reality of my community was almost just as impactful to my mental health, my physical health, my hopes, my dreams, my aspirations, right? Being able to, like, really believe that something could come from that, that something better could be provided to me from there. And then not only do we have that, but you also understand that there's a huge amount of gun violence that occurs in our city too. Like, I'm gonna say we, because I know a lot of us can relate to this. We have lost a lot of family members and friends to gun violence, like a lot. And I just kind of want to hold a moment of silence for that. For those we lost, for friends, for family members, those who were innocent bystanders, the children who were hit by bullets that didn't even have their name on it. Like, we felt what that feels like. So let me hold a couple moments of silence for those folks and those family members that we lost. May they continue to rest in paradise and peace. May they continue to protect us and keep close to our hearts. And may we continue to fight for a change in the way our communities exist right now. Because with everything that is currently going on in our world right now, y'all, like, we really don't need more violence. And the community that I was raised in, I was raised on 66 International for the majority of my life, but I did grow up for a portion of my life in, you know, the 30s, Harrington. And man, you kind of just, I mean, experiencing life in the dirty 30s, which, you know, if all of us got our little streets we from. And then moving to 66 International was completely different. Living on 66 International, I lived right across from, like, Heaven's Court and The Ville. If you know East Oakley, you know where The Ville is. And The Ville, I believe, is The Village, but we just named it The Ville. But we had an apartment that overseen the main street. So we witnessed a lot. I believe we lived in that apartment for, like, more than 10 years. And the things that we would witness were, like, drive-by shootings that would result in someone, like, laying dead on the street. And, you know, most times it was just, like, robberies. I mean, you could see it all. Like, our window, we lived in those orange apartments. If you drive by 66, you'll see those tall orange apartments. That's exactly where we were. And you could see everything. And the community that we lived on was known as Baby Iraq. Like, how you gonna, if you name in a city, you know, like, Baby Iraq, that states a lot about the similarities that we experienced there that are very similar to, like, the war zone. And sometimes those experiences don't go talked about because they're so normalized for us. There was even, like, a street where my sister lived on, similar apartments. And she lived on Seminary, and the nickname for Seminary was Cemetery because of how many people died on that street. And when it comes to those life experiences of, like, again, being raised like that and being surrounded by that, it's like, how can we expect folks to really, like, have hopes and dreams and aspirations when we're not recognizing or attending to the trauma that a lot of us are experiencing constantly? And so that gun violence, then we also have police brutality. You know what I mean? Like, I know that that is a controversial conversation because a lot of folks are like, you know, my uncle's a police officer, my brother's a police officer, and he's cool, so I don't believe, you know. And I'm like, I get it. Like, I'm not, you know, the one to say that all police officers are bad. I'm more of the system is fucked up. And folks can really have a heart and passion to, like, want to go into the field and, you know, help their community be better. But the system in place is something that doesn't have that same goal. It kind of teaches folks that, you know, it's you or us. And it creates fear on both ends. And that's just not a way that the system should work. And so, me personally, growing up in the hood, I witnessed a lot of police brutality, like a lot of police harassment. And a lot of it was targeted against my friends or targeted against family members. But a lot of it are things that I personally witnessed too. Like, I remember in high school, and I have this experience, I believe I wrote about this in my book. In high school, there was an experience that I had where we had what's called truancy. I was at Fremont High School. And how it worked is, like, we had off-campus lunch. And if you were late to school or late coming back, like, you got in trouble with the cops. And number one, police should not even be, in my opinion, this is my strong belief, police shouldn't be, you know, in charge of school disciplinary actions. Like, unless we, you know, in danger, we really need y'all help. Like, their presence there really wasn't helpful. And so, basically, this particular day, me and my cousin and our close friend were kind of walking in from lunch. And I kid you not, y'all, like, if you know the gate to get in Fremont, we're walking into the gate, but we didn't make it on the other side of the gate before the bell rang. And police officers kind of already were harassing us and, like, kind of talking mad shit to us and, like, threw us in the back of their police car and fucking took us downtown. Like, what the fuck? Like, what did we do? Mind you, like, we were good-ass students. Like, I had a 4.0 GPA. Like, my cousin for sure had good-ass grades. My friend had good-ass grades. And it's like, that shit don't protect you. And I think people forget that. Like, sometimes we think, like, oh, when the police come and handle shit, like, they just taking care of the people who are bad. And it's like, nah, sometimes they really criminalizing folks for just existing, bro. Because how you mad at me for being 1 minute late to school, but you taking me away from my education and now taking me downtown where I don't have access to being able to let my parents or my mama know where I'm at. And so that particular time, I mean, that one isn't as bad as the other experiences that we witnessed in our community. There was a time we had a homie who, like, had the speaker grill. And if you're from the hood, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's these speakers in the grill that kind of just play loud ass music, and the shit slap, you know what I mean? Like, I've always wanted one in my car, but he was kind of driving around. Music wasn't too loud though. I mean, that's my own personal opinion. The cops pulled us over. I was in the car, and the cops is just like, how they approached us, they already had their guns drawn, already were talking shit, like, just hella dehuman, like, talking to us is, like, in a, such a dehumanizing way that, number one, didn't make us feel safe. And if you're from Oakland, if you're from the hood, you sometimes don't, you don't like when people talk to you like that, because maybe you grew up having your parents talk to you like that all the time. Maybe you were bullied, you were talked to, you know, in a tone that just doesn't make you feel good. So sometimes, you know, these cops come up to us to talk shit, and we'd be, like, trying to stand up for ourselves. Like, no, like, you ain't got to talk to us like that. And just creates more tension. And this particular officer was just like, you know, you can't be playing your music in the grill. He said, all right, I'll turn it off. And the cop said, I'm gonna turn it off for you. And the cop, I kid you not, walked up to this dude's grill, took out his knife, and cut all the fucking wires from the dude's grill, like, damaged his shit. And I remember homie being able to, like, be like, what the fuck, like, that was hella, you know, you damaged my shit, I'm going to report you. And the officer was just like, I don't care. Like, go ahead, do what you got to do. And sometimes that mindset, I feel like a lot of police officers in the hood, they are protected by that badge. And sometimes they're able to get away with dehumanizing and also harassing and also just doing whatever the fuck they want to do, really. Because they know that sometimes we don't have all the access and resources and money to really put up a lawsuit or really fight for, you know, the shit that we are trying to stand for. I mean, those are some of the cases, but we see it more harshly in our communities with, you know, Black folks and just people in general who, like, are just viewed upon as, like, a menace to society. our neighborhoods would be like, oh, you fit the description of some of a person who committed a robbery. And it's like, what's the description? Like, white t-shirt, blue jeans. Like, damn, you know how many people out here with a white t-shirt, blue jeans? Like, you just gonna come and fucking, like, smash everybody down? I feel like this goes untalked about, and sometimes it's even scary for me to talk about, too. And I'm gonna be real with y'all, because I have a lot of folks who try to convince me that it don't exist. And I'm like, bro, if you live in the hood, like, really, really, really live in the hood, you would understand it differently, because you know it does exist. You witness it, you feel it, you see it. And not only that, but now that we have access to social media, we see it all over social media all the time. And it's like, even when it's existing in our faces like that, folks still would try to kind of say, like, nah, it doesn't happen, or try to put the blame on the person that, you know, is potentially killed by police officers. Like, maybe he shouldn't have ran away. Like, y'all, the homie feared for his fucking life. Like, what do you mean? How is running away a threat? How does running away result to you dying? How is that a consequence of, you know, the structures and shit we face? And so, it's a lot of trauma there. I felt like, for me, I could talk about it a little more, because I do have the privilege of, like, being able to be raised, born and raised in the hood, but also being able to, like, grow up in communities of privilege. Like I said, like, when I went to UC Davis for college, something that I witnessed and learned is, like, I mean, I still went out there and I still had that mindset of, like, you know, police officers, I don't fuck with them. Like, nah, like, I don't feel safe around them. They trigger me. Their sirens when they're behind me. You know, I sit up straight. I make sure my seatbelt on, you know, like, all this shit. I make sure my music ain't too loud. Like, it's almost like I feel like a sergeant is in front of me. And that's not the feeling that I feel we should be having in our communities, especially if they're supposed to be there for our safety, too. Because sometimes it makes us feel like, y'all make me feel like I'm not even safe for myself. Like, I'm really the bad person. And I'm sure that that feeling can be internalized within other folks, too, growing up in the hood. And so, in privileged communities, what I saw is, like, it was really helpful. Like, y'all, it's really different. Like, UC Davis, they fucking drive by, they wave at you sometimes. I mean, there's still cases where they were harassing, like, my friends and stuff, like, pulling them over for, like, little shit if they were black. Like, oh, yo, license plate light is out, or this is out, or, like, just some dumb shit. And another example is, like, there was a time where we were driving in a car, and the person I was in the car with, his speaker, his car radio wasn't even in the car. Like, somebody had stole his shit, or he was getting it fixed. I can't remember, but it was for sure one of those two. And the police officer pulled us over and said, do you know why we pulled you over? We sitting there hella confused, like, nah, sir. You know, we know the whole command. Like, no, sir, why did you pull us over? And he for sure was just like, you know, I could hear your music from all the way down the block. And we looked at each other like, what the fuck? Like, how, sir? How did you hear our fucking music? Because we pointed to our radio system and said, sir, we don't even have a radio system in our car. And I know he felt so fucking stupid, but I promise y'all, like, he still would not put up that he was wrong. Didn't even apologize. He was like, you know, next time, I'm gonna let you go with a warning, but next time it's gonna be a ticket. And we just sitting there like, for real? So you're like, it's okay to say sorry. It's okay to be like, you know what, I had the wrong car, whatever it is. But I think that once they saw him wearing a UC Davis football shirt, they kind of just let him be and, like, let it go. So it's almost like sometimes certain titles you have do protect you. Like, if you're part of the football team or part of some basketball team for the college, like, they'll be like, all right, you cool. But what happens if you still a part of it but not rocking your shirt or rocking this and that? Like, what is that experience like? Is it different or is it similar based on the color of one's skin? And so what I noticed, it was less of that experience in those communities, though. Like, you don't see them driving around harassing people how they are in the Bay Area or in marginalized communities, per se. Like, they for sure aren't, like, coming up to people, flashing lights in their face. I know y'all know about the flashlight, how they just be driving by, putting this bright-ass light in your face for no reason, just to let you know that they hear and they see you. And so I didn't have none of those experiences in the Bay, which kind of started to change my perspective of police. Like, okay, like, they cool, you know. But then you go back to the hood, like, every time I go visit, you see the same shit and you're like, nah, like, these experiences are real. And I truly believe that sometimes maybe it's hard for folks to believe that it's real because they don't see it, they don't experience it. Like, for instance, when I moved out to, I was gonna say LA, but when I tell folks I lived in the valley and I was claiming LA, they would for sure laugh at me like, bitch, that is not LA. And I'm like, okay, like, you're right. But you know, when I was living in the valley, whole different experience too. Like, you hardly ever see police around. Like, I was living in Northridge, and I promise you, like, if you've seen them around, okay, cool. But you don't hear sirens, you don't hear fire trucks, like, and if you do, it's rare. Like, we used to be like, oh shit, somebody grandma fell, and then, you know, we used to joke like, help, I can't get up, you know. But those were the reasons why we would assume the police were around, not because it was a shooting, not because it was a drive-by, not because of this, or not because somebody's being harassed. Like, in this particular community, it was none of that. And I can, having, I guess, those two perspectives of and experiences of being raised in the hood and seeing how police navigated differently there versus how they navigated in these communities of privilege where every house got the American flag outside their house, y'all. Like, that's the community I lived in. Like, every single house around us had the fucking American flag out. Some of them had that white picket fence. Some of them had the houses that looked the same. Every time, like, you had a party past 9 o'clock, they call the cops on you type thing. And living there really, you know, showcased that. Like, I told myself, like, damn, if I lived here my whole life, I would probably be convinced that police brutality does not exist. Not because I don't see it on social media, but because I don't see it in my community. And I feel like sometimes that's the barrier for many of us, being able to really recognize the different forms of oppression and barriers existing in our neighborhoods. It's because we don't live it. And because we don't live it, we don't experience it. Because we don't experience it, we can't be the advocates for it. And so some of the barriers that we face are sometimes, it's really like, we poor, bro. Like, a lot of us are growing up in poverty in those communities in the hood. And it's so hard for us to, you know, make a dollar out of 15 cents. And so sometimes we learn to hustle in ways that may not be the best ways. I get it. I feel it. You know what I mean? But I respect everybody's hustle because sometimes, like, it's a survival tool and tactic used for us to keep our families in a house or keep paying rent or keep paying bills. And these are the experiences that, you know, most folks do get criminalized for. And a lot of males particularly are taken from their households, put into prison. And how does that help the family? You know what I mean? Like, causing for more single parents to exist. And I know some folks are probably going to be like, how are you just going to justify people doing bad shit to survive? And it's like, I get it. I hear you. My perspective is just a little different because I got a little grace when it comes to living in the hood, because being able to see the struggles that we face with and the cards we're dealt with, which sometimes aren't always in our benefit. So I felt like most times we criminalize poverty. Like, if folks had more access to money, affordable housing, resources, health care, food, like, the girl, I'm not even going to the grocery stores and the lack of access we have to that, the food deserts that exist in the hoods yet, but there's just so much experience that isn't thought upon, or I don't know, looked upon when it comes to analyzing why we are the way we are, why we exist the way we do. And so there's some folks who might be like, you know, like, well, I guess I'm just gonna share this experience too. There was a time where I borrowed my mama's car and we were going to a party. I was gonna go turn up with some of my best friends, and this was like after I graduated from college, so the party was like in the nicer part of Oakland, so I thought, and came back, they broke into my mama's car, y'all. Like, they busted her fucking back window out, and oh my god, they stole all her shit from her trunk. She had brand new shoes, clothes, like, oh my god, she had so much stuff in there. And I was so scared to call in and tell her, like, mama, like, they broke into your car and they busted your window. Like, you know, my mom, you know, we grew up not really having money to pay for shit, so I knew that for her it would be a trigger of how am I going to pay for this. And so I took care of it and everything, but at the end of the day, for me, I wasn't even mad that her car broke into. Like, my instant thought was, you know, I hope whatever they took is, like, beneficial to their life struggles right now. Like, if they took shoes and clothes, I hope that they're able to utilize that to their best of their advantage, and kind of more so, like, prayed over them, you know? And I believe that's the grace I hold in my heart, because I understand the struggle a little differently. It's probably in a deeper way, but not everybody has that, because I do understand it is an inconvenience to have your car broken into or robbery to occur. Like, there are times where I'd be outside of school waiting and, like, dudes would just come up to me, point a gun at my head and, like, you know, rob me. Like, they'll for sure 211, like, everything I have, like, iPods. I think I had an iPod shuffle one time, and then I had nothing but Metro phones, but they'll for sure take it too. And sometimes, like, I really grew up angry. Like, sometimes I even tell myself, like, man, if I ever get a gun pointed at me and people trying to rob me, this is how I'm going to react. Like, I'm going to beat their ass. I'm going to say something. I'm going to smack them. Something like, that's always how I used to think. But then when it happened, you stuck. Like, for me personally, I froze. I was like, oh, shit. Like, it's not even worth dying over. And when I went to college, I just started to learn, like, studying sociology, you really study this, the system and how shit exists and why they exist the way they do. So I started to understand poverty a little differently, and, like, how it was really structured around people just trying to survive. Like, people don't rob for fun. I think that's probably the stigma, or maybe we don't think about why the person committed the crimes, because, number one, if it's perpetuated against us, like, we feel we are the victims, which we are. Like, I get it. I think sometimes if people have more access to resources and shit, like, in those privileged communities I was living in, like, if Oakland could have as much access to the shit they had there, would crime decrease? So, can we analyze that question a little bit? If we did not exist in, or struggle with as much poverty as we do now in the hoods, if our family members had more access to documentation and being able to work and start their own businesses and build their credit, like, what crime still exists the way it do now in our hoods? Because I don't think it would. But that's me, right? So I wanted to share, I know I was talking a lot about the violence and stuff, and sometimes we get too caught up in focusing on only that we forget that there's good parts of the hood too. Like the beauty and creativity that comes from the hood. I remember growing up, you know, especially during summertime. I'm bringing summertime up right now because it's hella hot out here. I'm in LA and the temperature is like 90 degrees right now, but like there are times where when I grew up in the projects, like, in those apartments on 66, we didn't have no pool, we didn't have no water hose, we didn't have, you know, access to cool ourselves down, we didn't have a AC center in the home, like, none of that. And so, you know, me and the neighborhood kids, like, the bebe kids is what I call them now, because we was for show bebe kids, but we would grab, like, pozole pots, spaghetti pots, like, all that stuff. We grab cups and bowls, and we will fill everything up with water from inside the house, like maybe in the shower. Then we, you know, oh, another one was a trash can. Like, we clean out the trash can with soap and water and then fill it up with water and, like, have like three or four people carrying it outside. And we would just have water fights, like, really trying to make the best of our situation. Like, that creativity there, like, yeah, we didn't have no pool, we didn't have this or that, but we made it happen. And I felt like the hood also has a lot of benefits of poverty in that sense, allow for us to be so creative in our struggle to where, even though, yeah, it was hard, like, we made it to where it was still livable and still some parts that we could enjoy about it. So there's a lot of memories that come from, like, you know, I don't know if folks remember, or maybe if y'all part of that generation where folks used to pop open them fire hydrants. Y'all remember the fire hydrants, like, spilling hella water and cars running through them to kind of get that free car wash. But you see kids holding their hands and running through and they fucking diapers and t-shirts and shorts and stuff like that. And it was fun, and we would have as much fun before, you know, the fire department came and turned it off. And so, you know, those experiences that we had of being able to keep ourselves cool during a hot summer are still things that I cherish so much, because it's a part of our history, our documented history of growing up in a hood. What else? I think another thing is, like, creativity is, like, the artwork, like, the graffiti. Like, to me, like, I live in a hood again, but but when I was living in the valley, there for sure was like, you wouldn't see not 1 ounce of graffiti on a wall. And if it did occur the next day, that shit was painted, because they're all about their image and trying to uphold this standard that we don't have in our communities. And so to me, seeing graffiti artwork and paintings and spray can work like that is like, it's hella beautiful to me. Like, especially when so like on abandoned buildings or on the side of the freeway, like that shit is so nice to me. The colors they choose and some of the messages they be spreading, like it's hella political but hella powerful too. And that sense of art is us expressing ourselves and us kind of decorating our communities with colors and beauty and things we can look at that are different than the normal, you know, community experience that I don't always see. And so I also love how, like, different neighborhoods in our Bay, I mean, in the Bay Area, which I'm pretty sure are very similar to LA too, they separated by, like, cultures. Like, we got Fruitvale, that's kind of like the Latinx community that's decorated with all the stores with the piñatas and all the taco trucks and shit like that. I believe we have, like, Korean Town or Chinatown. And, like, just different places like that. Y'all know what I'm talking about. And stuff like that just allows for us to still see that within the so many different ethnicities that exist there, like we could still coexist in some way, shape, or form than a lot of people in the majority of the world can. We get accustomed to living with each other, where some folks can't live with us based on the perceptions. Maybe they don't live in our community, so their image of us is based upon the movies that perpetuate an image of us that isn't always true, which I get. And the hustle that comes out of the hood too, I feel like is really important. Like, number one, like, you gonna see vendors everywhere on the corners, all right? Like, you craving some fruit, you just drive down East 14, you know what I mean? You gonna see somebody, or on a foothill, you gonna see somebody outside with a little vendor station, you know? You see people, like, creatively selling, like, bracelets and handmade bands from maybe from where they're personally from, like, their ethnic backgrounds. You see rosarios being sold, you see flowers, and people just really out there hustling. And I think sometimes we forget, like sometimes I look at them and I'm like, damn, you know what, like, I personally could not be standing outside in this heat every day trying to sell flowers to cars who just be driving by you all the time. But for folks, it's an opportunity to make that money. And I feel like that's another experience that the hood grants us, is being able to learn how to hustle, especially at a young age. Like, some of us watched our parents be house cleaners and clean other folks' houses that are, like, fucking hella nice and everything. And we had to come back home to where we lived, you know what I mean? So my mom used to clean people's houses sometimes to make that extra money for rent or for bills if we didn't have it. And I used to be her little assistant. I would go with her and help clean the houses to, you know, my mom had a cleaning disorder, which I felt like at some part of her life it was like a disadvantage, but for most part of her life she turned it into a hustle and it helped us survive. And so there are folks who literally would sit there and have a yard sale and sell their clothes, their shoes, their toys, like, you know, shit they don't use no more. Or sometimes they sell shit that they still maybe needed, like their TVs, but they're like, shit, it's probably more important having rent paid this month than having a TV in my house. So you see a lot of, like, the hustle that comes out of the community. You see folks selling, like, if your high school was any similar to mine, we had kids starting their own hustles. They used to buy, like, the Costco chips and candy bars, come to school selling them for $1 each. And that was a pretty as, like, that was a pretty cool hustle, number one. We learned how to keep it on the hush-hush so that teachers and, you know, counselors never knew what was going on. But that person will fucking make bank and selling candy bars and stuff. And so that hustle is something that I feel like is really important to recognize, because it installed a lot in me. Because some folks, like, I don't think I talk a lot about the struggles I had going to college. Folks just see me going to college and see that I graduated, and they're like, damn, she hella smart, she did it. And it's like, nah, y'all, like, sometimes I barely survived myself, you know? And when I was in college, I couldn't ask my mom for money for rent or bills or food or anything, because if I ask my mom for $20, that's $20 less than what she gonna have for herself and the kids. So I had to work two jobs in college, and I had to figure shit out myself, and like, that shit was hard. Sometimes I worked two jobs while full-time student, and there are times I had to pick up a third hustle, which is like cleaning houses. And I'll never forget the time that, like, I had this website. I think I created an account with, is it care.com? I don't know. It was some website that you can just basically go clean up people's houses. And I put my rates on there for, like, a general cleaning, deep cleaning, all this stuff. And people paid me good normally. And then until this one time, this lady who hired me told me she wanted a deep cleaning. And she wanted me for 3 hours. And I'm like, shit, that's $300. I think I was charging, like, $100 an hour or something. Maybe even, like, $60 an hour or something. But it was for sure, like, some good money. And I really needed it, too. So sacrificed my weekend that day and deep clean her house for 3 hours, y'all. I mean, I'm talking about hands and knees, like scrubbing like the floors, the fucking, what are those called, the floor, I don't know, you know, the little, what, the white thing that go around the floor borders, I don't know, they're called something, but y'all know what I'm talking about. So literally hands and knees scrubbing all those clean, like, bathroom floors where there was piss all over the floor and toilet. I know y'all know what I'm talking about. Like, really, really scrubbing her shit clean. Like, cleaned her whole tub, her kitchen, her living room. Like, scrubbed everything down, and it looked so good. But for me, you know, I was hustling and trying to make that money so I could pay my rent too. And at the end of it, tell me why this lady wrote me a check for $30. Y'all. $30. Like, I can't make this shit up. Like, she really paid me $30 for how much I clean. Like, and I thought it was a tip. So I'm like, all right, thank you. And she's like, oh, I really love, you know, how good of a job you did. I'm going to hire you again, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, all right, cool. You know, I thought that $30 was like my tip. So I thought she was going to pull out some cash. So I'm sitting there still standing there, like, stuck on stupid, like, just waiting. And she's like, oh, did you need me to walk you out? And I was like, oh, no, like, I'm waiting for, you know, for payment. I'm, like, hella confused. She's like, I just paid you. I said, you paid me $30. She's like, yeah, on my watch. She was like, yeah, I charge $10 per hour. I said, how you gonna charge me with, like, you get what I'm saying? Like, I was just so confused. Like, how you gonna charge me $10 an hour because you saying that's your rate? When you looked at my account and booked me for a deep cleaning, which I know you saw my rate. And it turned into this debate, and she pretty much was just so stern on, like, not paying me anything else other than those $30. And I'm like, that $10 an hour for the amount of work I did, like, I felt so, so little. And I remember, like, walking to the car with all my own supplies, y'all, that I brought and bought. And I cried, like, I for sure cried. And I cried because it was a feeling that it almost felt like I was slapped. I wish I could say slapped in my face, but I felt like that's not a deep enough explanation or description to really fit how I felt. I felt like she stabbed my soul because it made me feel so little. And I cried, like, I really, really cried in my car. And this lady, you know, I sat outside her house because I'm like, you know, the hood part of me want to come out and just bang on her door and slap the shit out of her. Like, I really want to express my anger onto her, but I'm I can't risk my financial aid that's going to help me cover, you know, some of these bills too. So it was kind of like, what do I do? What options do I have? And then it made me think of all the house cleaners who are undocumented right now, who are like my friends' moms and aunties and maybe my own aunties who really engage in this kind of work, and how many times they go with the same disrespect and they can't speak up because they're threatened with, like, I'll call the cops. And sometimes if you don't have documentation, you can't call the cops yourself because you're undocumented. So it hurt my soul even more because I'm like, damn, like, I can't even imagine that feeling upon other people. And so I think that's why my heart is so humble and I have so much empathy now. It's not because I just grew up understanding and having a vulnerable soul to see, like, the struggles people face, but because I face a lot of it myself, that I can be very open-minded to how shit can really impact people, not only on an individual level but on a community level too, you know what I mean? Like, that shit really be impacting folks. And so I know I was talking about yard sales earlier too, and y'all bear with me, I am losing my breath, okay? I know y'all hear me like gasping for air. It's okay, bear with me, like I'm still here with y'all too. But you know, when I graduated from my master's program, I didn't have a job yet, and I had just taken, you know, a family member in that I was helping, and I had asked my family, who are their uncles and aunties, for help for like $200 for rent and to help me, because I didn't, you know, I was supposed to have somebody else move in and cover that portion, but you know, I wanted to move with the goodness of my heart and really, like, you know, help somebody. So I asked family for $200, y'all. I was like, can y'all just let me borrow? I start my job next week, I could pay y'all back. And family kind of just, like, gave me everything else but help. Like, criticized the fuck out of me, judged me for taking this particular person in, who I don't know why, like, just hella bad shit. And because I spoke up to them about it, like, they were like, who the fuck do you think you are, Mother Teresa? So I got met with, like, hella shit like that to basically allow for me to see, like, damn, number one, if you know me, like, you know, I don't always ask for help. Like, I'm not the type to ask for help at all, because growing up as the oldest, sometimes I have that pressure that I gotta have it all figured out. And so that one time I asked for help, y'all, and that's the shit I was met with, was just, like, hella down talking, hella people just not believing in the person I was taking in, and whatever their personal biases, which I understand based on their own, you know, maybe their own experiences, I'm not sure. But I had to figure some shit out. So guess what? The same struggle that I was witnessing growing up in the hood of, like, people having yard sales and shit like that allowed for me to, like, be like, all right, I gotta hustle too. This is my time to hustle. Because, yeah, I don't have a job right now, but guess what? My bills ain't gonna wait for me. And so your girl started having yard sales. And what was cool, there was another student in, you know, my grad program who was also needing that assistance too, that financial assistance. So we came together, hosted a yard sale, put some flyers up. And I kid y'all not, that first yard sale I had, I made $560. $560, y'all. Like, I only needed $200 and came up with $560. And that shit, like, really, I went into survival mode, I'm not gonna lie. Like, the whole time of the yard sale, I don't think I was really there emotionally or present. I think I was just, like, really, like, shit, I gotta survive, I gotta hustle, like, I gotta do what I gotta do. I even started painting and doing art. I think a lot of folks start noticing my creativity come out. And I think what folks forget is that I was selling art to survive. It wasn't even, like, because I'm having fun doing it. I mean, that too, some of it was fun creating, but sometimes you got to turn your talents into a hustle just to survive. And sometimes it kind of disconnects you from that talent a little bit. But y'all, like, I did survive that. And I felt like that's what I wanted to highlight, is that even though, like, the struggle that we experience in a hood is so harsh and so hard on us, like, sometimes it really does give us the experiences that are needed to create folks who are just maybe who hold more empathy for struggles and oppressions that are faced. Like, it pushed me to want to learn more of how I can help my hood. And I think the Healing Ourselves Heals Our Hoods podcast is really created to talk about these things that no one really fucking talks about, that a lot of us can relate to, and that impacts a lot of us growing up in these kind of neighborhoods. And so I think most folks, their goal is to get out the hood, and I get it. Like, I see it. Like, you want to get out of the struggle. You don't want to face that sense of, or that kind of like mindset of being on a survival mode all the time. Or maybe you want some peace from the PTSD that we experience from all the trauma that goes on there, and things of that sense. But for me, it was never like my goal to make it out the hood. Like, every time I walked that stage, I wish I could say I did it for me. Like, I really wish I could hold my head high and be like, yeah, like, you feel me? Like, I did this. But if it were up to me, y'all, I'm gonna be 100% honest with y'all. I would have given up a long time ago. Like as soon as I started college, like my undergrad, I would have dropped out a long time ago. And so every time I push for higher education, it's really helped me find tools and techniques so I could bring back to my community. And so this podcast is existing because I want to start the conversation, okay? I know I can't change the world. I know I can't heal everybody tomorrow. Like, if it were up to me, I'd be like abracadabra or bibbidi bobbidi boo, you know what I mean? Like, with my little wand in my hand, like, really trying to make shit happen. But unfortunately, I don't have that much power, and neither does anyone else in this world, because we are really ran by a society that is structured the way that they want to be structured to work the way they want to work. I feel like a lot of folks are starting to see that a lot more now, and so I'm hoping that we can build more community and unity and start eliminating the little forms of oppression that we do face in our hoods and our communities, so that we have a higher chance of being able to partake in these positions of power or positions in general, to be able to help make those changes that we really want to see in our hoods, y'all. I know I just kind of been talking, and I'm not even scratching the surface of what being hood made is, or what it could look like for different folks. I just kind of wanted to introduce with a little personal experiences of myself before the series actually goes on and we go to talking to our guest speakers, who I'm so excited to have. I'll be advocating those flyers next week. They'll be hosted on IG Live, and then that would be hosted or then transferred onto this podcast, where you all can have access to that episode too. And so, hood made, I want us to start being more proud about the cities we come from. I know they're not easy to live in. I know they're hard. I know sometimes it's an embarrassment to live where we live, or there's so much shame that comes from that. But I want us to focus on the beauty and the creativity that does stem from there, because so much talent comes from there, y'all. Like, I don't know if folks know, like, the Black Panther Party existed first in Oakland, and there are neighborhoods where a lot of people came from and made it somewhere and turned around and started to be advocates for our society, our struggles, our reality, things of that sense. And I want us to continue to keep pushing for that, because I don't want us to ever believe that our voice don't matter, or that we too little to speak up, or that there's maybe members who just gave up having hope. And I don't want that to exist for us, y'all. Like, I know what it's like not to have hope. I get it. But when we have hope, a lot more can happen. And I want us to be in a position to where we can kind of grow together and hold those experiences together. So tune in with me as we continue on this series, as we continue on having these conversations with other folks, and more so being able to have these conversations with your own family members, your friends too, or maybe taking time to recognize, what moments were you living on survival mode? What did that feel like? What kind of tools and techniques were taught to you from being raised in the hood that you can utilize today that has helped you survive? Because, yeah, we've been through some shit, y'all. We for sure have. But sometimes we made it a lot easier. Like I said, when we was having the water fights, like, sometimes our situation was hot as fuck, but we were creative so that we could survive in ways that still be brought upon us these great memories to hold and cherish. And so, hoping we can push for that light a little bit more and allow for us to kind of feel proud of where we come from, and to know that we're not nowhere near where we're supposed to be as a community or communities. But it's okay, because we the ones that are going to change that. You feel me? Me, you together, you listening, me talking, you talking, me listening. Like, it all comes from the conversation, because the conversation gets folks talking. And that's what's important. So thank you so much for tuning in with me, Desiana Torres, on this episode. And I'll see y'all next week. Have an amazing and safe day. Thank you again for tuning in with my podcast, Healing Ourselves Heals Our Hoods. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on your notifications for future episodes that will be full of authentic storytelling by members of our own community. You can find me on Instagram at CONFI_DEZ. If you haven't already gotten your copy of my poetry book titled The Becoming of Her, be sure to get yours today. We forget that reading is just as reflective and powerful. I'm sending lots of love and peace and light to you all. May we continue to heal ourselves and each other every day.